The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, the Cabinet has approved plans for the abolition of the triple lock. It was among many key decisions that were made by the Cabinet yesterday. We're joined now by Sean Defoe, a political correspondent with us and also host of the Let Me Explain podcast. Sean, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, lots of interesting things have happened politically over the last while, but the idea of Paul Murphy being denuded for the assembled Dáil is very fascinating.
Yeah, an image that, in fairness to him, he said he wouldn't subject anyone to by posting it on X or anywhere else. So this was at the AI committee yesterday, and Niamh Smith was up before the junior minister for artificial intelligence and talking about X and Grok. And the meeting that she had, and she referenced it a number of times through the committee with X a couple of weeks ago, with, I think she said, two staff members from London and one from the US or somewhere else, in which she was told and promised that this denudification feature, as you say, this tool by which people would be stripped naked, essentially, by Grok AI, was going to be disabled worldwide. And she had repeated that a number of times at the committee. And then it came to Paul Murphy's contribution, in which he said, now, are you sure? Are you 100% sure that's exactly what they said? Before pointing out that one of his staff members, with his permission, had been able to make him naked, essentially, in a photo, or take his clothes off in a photo using X and a VPN yesterday morning, right before the committee. Something that really caught Niamh Smith off guard. She didn't expect it. She was asked whether or not she had actually followed up and checked if this feature was disabled, and said she had actually deleted her own X account and so couldn't do it personally, but had her staff members ask, and really changed the tone of the meeting, because after that she said that she didn't trust X, particularly in light of what Paul Murphy had said, and that she was going to pursue it quite vigorously and pursue potentially new restrictions. The most consequential of which, that she mentioned at the committee yesterday, would be making X a publisher, or making social media companies publisher, and making them responsible for what goes up in their platform, in the same way that we would be responsible for, say, any text that you would read.
Now, this is the doomsday scenario for social media platforms, because if they are to be held legally liable for everything that goes on the platform as publishers, I mean, they would be sued all day long.
Completely. And some of the stuff, particularly on X, is absolutely libelous, is disgusting, and is a cesspit, frankly, when you get into certain corners of it. So if you were responsible, and the argument has always been that no social media platform would have the scope to screen every single bit, take it in time, that they wouldn't be subject to legal action, and it would be an utter legal minefield. But I suppose, until you put that gun up to the temple and say, look, this is the potential consequences, are they ever going to actually get real with this kind of content? Because, of course, they are making money off of it.
Now, going to the Cabinet Affairs yesterday, a number of key decisions. One, the decision to abolish the triple lock. And for people who don't know, it's about having to get government approval, Dáil approval, and ultimately UN approval before we can embark on any overseas military peacekeeping operation. And we pointed out again and again, and it was a topic in the presidential election, giving Vladimir Putin or Donald Trump a veto over our participation just seems mad.
Absolutely. And that's the coalition argument, is that the world has changed, geopolitics has completely changed. And while the concerns initially were about Russia, you now have to look at the US in the direction that it's going. And why should we be beholden to them and beholden to the Security Council, that is fundamentally flawed in its setup, that hasn't approved a new peacekeeping operation since 2014 and looks very unlikely to do so? And the pushback from the opposition is real and is very, very strong. I think Sinead Gibney, the Social Democrats TD, called it the last nail in the coffin for Irish neutrality. Paul Murphy, previously mentioned, was highly critical of the move as well. I suppose, like, the flip is, do you just try to reform the UN? That seems to be what they're suggesting, that ultimately that's the way it should be done, and there should be UN oversight of peacekeeping missions, that we can't just abandon it because a couple of bad actors are holding the likes of the Security Council hostage. And if we do and start abandoning the institutions, that's when something like the Board of Peace that Donald Trump is trying to set up actually gains credence as a breakaway organisation. But the government very firm that it is going to push ahead with this, and that there will be a double lock, which means that the Dáil and the government will have to take a decision to post Irish troops abroad. I mean, Paul Murphy at one point got
borderline hysterical. He was saying this could mean that if this regime had been in place, Irish troops could have been involved in Iraq. Irish troops could get involved in a war on Donald Trump's side. Really kind of over the top stuff, as the teacher put it, ridiculous assertions was his actual quote. But it's one that's going to absolutely be divisive, because whatever about the triple lock itself, it is opening up a much wider conversation about Irish neutrality and how that works or doesn't work in the world we live in now.
Now, the St. Patrick's Day visits, the entire cabinet is decamping.
And for what I think is possibly the first time, all of the junior ministers as well. So 40 representatives of government, the 23 junior ministers, 15 cabinet ministers, as well as the Attorney General and the Ciaran Corla. A big focus on the US. You've got 9 government representatives or state representatives. I suppose Ciaran Corla is going to LA. She's not quite a government representative. And a big focus with 6 cabinet ministers all going stateside in order to talk to not only the Trump administration, but also the more middle of the road Republicans, if any of them still exist or have the backbone to actually speak up, and the Democratic Party, as well as business interests in the US, to try and make Ireland's case on a whole bunch of issues. But I always look at the ones and wonder, you know, what's going on those different trips. Like the Attorney General goes on one every year. Sometimes it's a ridiculous one. This time, Rosa Fanning is going to India, which actually probably makes an element of sense given the new EU-India trade deal, how that will be implemented here. You've got, so obviously the Taoiseach is going to Washington and Philadelphia, Simon Harris, Paris and London, Helen McEntee to Boston. And then Jack Chambers is going to Senegal and Nigeria, Dara O'Brien to Brazil. And when you get into the junior ministers, I mean, you know, a penny to be on the trip with Kevin Boxer-Moore into Perth, Brisbane and Adelaide. I'd say there'll be a bit of crackhead there. Frank Fian in the Philippines and Singapore, and Michael Healy-Ray doing a tour of the Nordics. Finland, Estonia, Latvia and Lithuania get his presence this Paddy's, Pat.
It's quite extraordinary. I mean, I'm sure there is work to be done, but you wonder, you get a junior minister heading off to some place to make a few speeches, as we heard earlier in the programme, probably going to be written by ChatGPT anyway. A reply from a Lithuanian minister, also written by ChatGPT. I mean, what is the point?
The bigger ones you can totally see the point of, and there's obviously a worth in particularly the US at the moment. Having been on some of the trips, there is just an element of the Irish getting access where we don't usually get access, or where other small countries don't, and building those ties, particularly in the likes of Europe. You could make the case, and the government will argue, that when we are dealing with an unreliable trading partner now in the US, it's more important than ever that we go to all sorts of different countries where we don't really have a relationship and just open the door on something and start these different discussions. And by the way, the officials pack these, there is very little downtime, but it is just it is kind of funny to imagine Jerry Buttermer in China, for example.
We know all about Trump's America and the criticism of it, and the Taoiseach has made the point, you know, no matter which administration is in power, either in the Oval Office or on Capitol Hill, you know, we keep the door open to the ongoing relationship. It's a big deal to get the access that we have, criticised, of course, by Sinn Féin, but they are sending their troops, if you'll pardon the phrase, to America anyway, aren't they?
I think so. I'm not sure if a final decision been made on Mary Lou and whether she'll go, because she hadn't gone last year, and I doubt they would this time. And certainly there have been more vocal criticism from Sinn Féin this time around about heading. Obviously, they have a huge operation in the United States, what was a fundraising operation now, one that does have a good bit of influence in a certain lobby in the US. So there is actually, I suppose, a point of keeping those going. You have, for example, Aintu is trying to do something similar. Friends of Aintu with the former Sinn Féin TD, Pádraig Tobin, has been making those trips this week in order to build up influence. So there is still a big draw of the US among our politicians. But I find it kind of ironic in the Dáil yesterday when you had the likes of the Social Democrats and People for Profit saying, under no circumstances should you go and meet Donald Trump in the White House. But at the same time, we absolutely need to keep our place in the triple lock and have the US government headed by Donald Trump have a veto over the troops. So there's a little bit of doublespeak going on as well.
Now, the new rent rules, there was a call to delay them because of the departure of many landlords from the market, and the idea in some quarters that by bringing in the new rules, which would give security of tenure for 6 years to a new tenant, but also might cause the rents for existing tenants or new tenants into existing tenancies to go up dramatically.
Yeah, I thought Pat Leahy had a good summation of it this morning in the Irish Times when he said there is definitely going to be short-term pain and it's unclear whether there's going to be long-term gain out of this, because that's the line the government has been saying, that they need to make tough decisions early on in the lifetime of this government in order to have it deliver by the back end and when they're obviously heading towards re-election, but also when the country is trying to rebound from this stagnation in the number of house building figures in particular. Again, to view the Dáil yesterday, it was complete yin and yang. You had the opposition saying that this is the rent rip-off bill, that this is going to cause out of control, even more than they are at the moment, rental prices and be nothing but doom and gloom. And the government, the Taoiseach in fact, describing it as the most significant package of rental protections in the history of the state because of those contracts of definite duration, of 6-year duration that will be brought in. And it's hard to know where it will land. We probably won't know for a couple of years whether overall it is going to be a successful one. In the meantime, the actual administration of it, it looks very shaky to get in done in time for March. The legislation only approved by Cabinet yesterday, it's going to have to be guillotined through parts of the Dáil and committee, which means very contentious rows to come over the next coming weeks if it's going to be in place by the 1st of March. And there are questions about whether the RTB will actually have the proper setup to administer all that and have charge of it by the 1st of March. Overall, you can see both sides. On one hand, I don't really see a huge amount here for the small landlords in that they'll be locked into having a tenant for 6 years, which is a no-fault eviction for the tenant. It's good if you are in the tenancy and restricted to 2% rent caps. But if you suddenly need that property for something, barring a very limited series of events, you can't actually get it back. And on the flip side, if you are a tenant and you are coming into a new tenancy in an apartment block or whatever, they can hike it up to market rates and you don't really have the protection that was there before. So what do they say about a good deal is one where nobody's happy? I think it is a case of no one's happy. It remains to be seen whether it's a good deal.
I wonder, though, in terms of the smaller landlords, when they have a tenant who's in there for 6 years, any new tenancy will be 6 years long at a minimum. And then what happens, as we've heard many times on the programme, when a tenant stops paying the rent, how quickly they might be able to get back their property, because the RTB is not really very good in terms of, you know, you got to go to court. So meantime, the tenant will be sitting there not paying rent. And eventually, after maybe a year or two, the tenant leaves without having paid any rent, and no back rent will ever be paid. So
no, and by the letter of the law, they will have entitlement to recourse. Obviously, it says that if they do stop paying the rent, you are entitled to evict them. But as you say, getting that done on a practical level is quite difficult. And so you wonder, is this just going to continue the direction we've seen where small landlords continue to leave the market and it becomes more attractive for the bigger landlords, institutional investors, the ones who are actually going to build apartment accommodation seems to be who the government is targeting. Because if you're looking at, you know, a pension fund in Germany or whatever that's making a long-term decision, if you say, right, well, you've got a guaranteed 6-year contract here of 2% increases every year, and after that, there's a chance we can bump it up even more depending on how the market is, that's probably more attractive to them than it would be to someone who has just one or two properties or an accidental landlord.
Sean Defoe, a political correspondent with News Talk, host of the Let Me Explain podcast, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.